Hello, and welcome to the Learning Made podcast. I'm Shannon Gattens, your host. In this podcast, we speak to subject matter experts in K-12, higher education, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Andrew Sheen, Chief Academic Officer of Los Angeles Pacific University and Chair of the Learning Made Higher Ed Advisory Board. Andrew brings a wealth of experience across K-12 and higher education, with a strong track record of leading large-scale transformation initiatives focused on improving student outcomes, expanding access, and driving innovation in online learning. In this episode, we will talk about what it really takes to scale high-quality education, exploring the role of experimentation, data infrastructure, and AI, as well as the growing importance of strategic partnerships with organizations like LearningMate to accelerate impact. Andrew, thank you for joining me.
I am excited to be here, Shannon, and to the Learning Mate family. Much appreciation.
Oh, that's great. I had such a good time in our prep call, and I found it really interesting that you originally wanted to be a high school English teacher like myself to at-risk students. Do you feel like you're still doing that work today a little bit, just in a different scale?
I do. So at LAPU, I really feel like I'm back to my roots. And one of the litmus tests is, would you recommend like your best friend or your sister or brother to go? And for LAPU, I would. And the reason is because there's such an incredible attention to the whole person. I mean, LAPU really cares about you getting a quality education that leads to a career advancement. But there's also because we're a Christian university, there's a real faith orientation to it. And so we work with a lot of students who are in, you know, like talked about at-risk youth, who are in like challenging times in their life. They may have just gone through a separation. They're managing kids. They might have had a job loss, you name it. And so the whole spiritual formation and care for the whole person makes me feel like I'm back in that classroom, which I would equate to like going to church every day. And it brings that sense of deep mission and purpose. So at LAPU, I feel like I'm back a bit. I'll tell you the and part. There is something very powerful being face to face with kids who are hurting. You feel their hurt. You know, you see it in their eyes. You sense it in their being. And it's a feeling, especially if you're a person with like a big heart and a real sort of call to that mission, that like you can't rest with that. Like you have to give those kids everything that you have. You have to, like, it wouldn't be right not to. And so that sense of connection with those kids who are hurting, that I honestly think sometimes you can just feel more in their presence. And then to see that, feel that, and get to see their development, to get to see that kid increase in their confidence in themselves, to begin to want to learn, to see them proud of themselves for improving in school. And I mean, that is just gold. And so I do feel that way at LAPU, but there is still something about being in the presence of those kids and really seeing them develop and transform.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, honestly. You've had sort of a front row to this transformation across students, but also across education in general. Online in education in particular has changed so much. Is there something that you see, especially when it comes to, you know, it doesn't even have to be the at-risk youth, but just youth in general who are sort of craving some of this connection during this online transformation? Is there something that we're not getting right yet that you think there's room to grow there?
Yeah, I do. So I'll never forget reading Clayton Christensen, Horn, and there's one other, I'm forgetting it, but when they came out with this Disrupting Class, how online learning will change the way the world learns. Like, for me, that was very provocative and exciting. I mean, it was like the equivalent of like reading, you know, that novel that just blew your socks off, or your favorite movie, your favorite band live. Like, it was one of those moments. And I really bought into this concept that over time you'll develop enough content and you'll learn enough about with what kind of student that content is working. And eventually you're going to create more of a customized education. I don't think we're there yet. I think we talk a big game. I think we've seen versions of adaptive learning platforms at different publishers. And I would say a lot of them are more like choose your own adventure. Maybe a couple of them are quasi-adaptive, but even forget like adaptive. I mean, when I was at the National University System, the president of National, guy by the name of David, who's now, I think, the chancellor of UMass Global. And prior to National, he was the dean for Johns Hopkins School of Education. And he had this whole concept, what he would call precision education. And because he was at Johns Hopkins, I mean, it came out of precision medicine. And the idea of precision medicine, right, is like you don't just guess when you're treating cancer, you know, or you don't just guess when you're trying to treat someone who's like really ill. You're treating somebody based on a tremendous amount of data and research that is much more, right, precise in the treatment and the effectiveness of that treatment. And so his whole notion was like, well, why not education?
Yeah.
You know, like for far too long, we have been in a one size fits all model, and great teachers differentiate. And with the age of AI, we're seeing the potential for more, you know, scalable, affordable one-on-one tutoring. But in terms of the organizational's, I think, potential that hasn't been achieved yet, it's really figuring out how to do more precision education, which means different type of students with different dispositions, with different learning needs and levels and different goals with different paces, right? You need to figure out how to provide them a much more precise education. So like I pray the future is ditch the one size fits all and let's go precision education.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. I think somebody's going to trademark that name pretty soon. So I could really get into that, actually, because I think it's really fascinating. We talk a lot at Learning Mate about the change from you know, static ways of doing things to AI, giving us the opportunity for more of those customized learning scenarios and situations, which I think students really do crave. And I think instructors want to provide. It's just at scale, it's very, very challenging. You know, you come with so much passion, really. It's so obvious that you love what you do. Let's talk about your work at Penn Foster briefly. How did you bring that passion into Penn Foster? I know that there was a lot of, you know, big change that took place there during your tenure. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Penn Foster Group. I spent, you know, almost 5 years there. A lot of people when I first joined didn't even know about Penn Foster Group. I think that's changing over time. But I worked with some of the most talented people I've ever worked with in my life there, who to this day are, and today's will be like lifelong friends.
Yeah.
What's fascinating to me and what I think drew out my passion and energy at Penn Foster Group is a couple things. One, it's radical affordability. I mean, you're talking no Title IV loans. Students 99% of the time graduate with zero debt. They can pay monthly. You're talking about like a $2,000, you know, let's say vet tech degree that leads you an immediate job making 45-50K, right? Mm-hmm. And so that whole idea of like radical affordability and direct to career align, I mean, I believe very deeply that's a big part of the future pie for online. I'm going to call it alternative ed. Let's just call it like more of an adult learner. I think in addition to that, what I loved about Penn Foster Group is because it was such a huge scale. I mean, Penn Foster High School alone, you know, you could argue it's in the 100,000 students. So you can test and learn rapidly. You don't have to wait 4 or 5 months to draw an insight. I mean, it can happen in
from
weeks.
The data. Yeah.
And so because the N is so big, right? So we at Penn Foster Group for 3 or 4 years, we really tested a lot of from big ideas to little ideas, and we failed a ton. I don't think we failed. I mean, I love this whole Thomas Edison idea when he was doing the light bulb, where he was interviewed and he said, I've not failed, you know, with like 10,000 times trying. So he said, I haven't failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that don't work.
Right.
That's so money. Right. I think that was really exciting. It was exciting to be able to have an idea, to debate the merits of that idea. But if you were able to make a case for it, to be able to test and have evidence rapidly. And so you can imagine over the course, with all of that talented people, over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 years, we tested so much and we learned a lot of things that didn't work. We learned a few things that really worked. And so that was really exciting.
What was one of those things that didn't work? And like, what did it teach you? Can you think of something?
I can. And it was one of the things that I thought would really work that didn't work. Students, you can imagine like one of the challenges when you're operating at that kind of scale is grading papers. Just imagine like, you know, trying to figure out how to grade like 10 papers, 20 papers, 30 papers. Well, what about like 50,000 papers?
Right.
And so you've got to create systems and you have to have the right bandwidth. And so it turns out that the time that it takes to turn around a paper with feedback, right, is an important metric to monitor. That sounds really obvious, right? One of the things we tested was our typical turnaround time for paper review, not grade, paper review. Like a student could submit their paper and you would be able to give them feedback prior to submitting for the final grade. Our typical turnaround time when I was there in the beginning was around 2 days. And we're like, well, what if we could partner with a vendor and we could decrease that to like a day or even like, you know, 10 to 12 hours. Mm. And we were able to do that. We were able to cut the time in half, but it didn't do really anything in terms of impacting grade, impacting completion. I mean, it had almost no significant difference between the treatment and the non-treatment group. And I'll tell you, though, sometimes things that don't work are the greatest lessons.
Yeah.
The greatest learnings, right? Because to me, the big aha was students need support at the point of need, especially in today's age. So you're a busy parent, you're working a full-time job, you're let's just say you're a clerk at Walmart, you want to be a manager, you need a high school diploma, you haven't written a paper in 10 years, you know, there you are, like really struggling to write your first paper, you want to get some help. You submit that paper and then the next day we're giving you feedback, but the next day, like you're working again, you're not going to get back online for like 2 or 3 days, as opposed to in that moment, in that point of need, that is where the student needs that solution. And that's where we were able to integrate AI feedback tool, working with a third party partner, we saw significant measurable impact. And so that sort of failure led to a big win.
Yeah, that's interesting. And now those tutor bots are the commonplace. So you were probably ahead of the game at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, students are using AI to write and submit their paper. In fact, they're using AI to grade their paper and no one's actually writing or grading papers anymore. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's this whole thing. Okay. That's another podcast. Yeah. I mean, we are actually working at LearningMate just on AI proofed assessment. I mean, yes, this is all true. And how do we get around it? And I have been talking to a lot of leaders in AI and like about this conundrum, But we'll switch gears because I don't have all day with you as much as I'd love to. One of the things you did at Penn Foster and the reason why we're even talking is that you're a strong advocate for external partners. I think that you had mentioned that sometimes there is less risk by partnering with external folks to scale up and scale down. So what did push you to partner with an organization like LearningMate, and what has sort of kept you with us all the way to becoming the the head of our advisory board?
Yeah. So when you go through that process of testing and learning and then failing a lot, but then finding like maybe 2 or 3 things that really work, but to scale them with your current bandwidth would take years and years, and you see the upside of doing it at a pace that you can't do on your own. That to me was like the first, oh my gosh, I see the power of partnering with an organization like Learning Mate, who has both domestic and offshore teams who can, you know, work around the clock if you need them to, and who has a kind of bandwidth that, you know, we can turn the volume up real, real loud for 7-8 months. And then if we want to scale back for a period of time, we can without having to let a bunch of people go.
That's right. Yeah.
That's one. I think the second is, like, you can't be the best in class at everything. You just can't. Right. I mean, I'll never forget, right, good to great and that whole hedgehog concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that speaks more to like your ultimate organizational differentiation point. But like a shade of that is like you can't be the best at building AI products and the best at building content and the best at, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I saw in Learning Mate the ability to bring in a skill set in a variety of different areas that we weren't going to be able to build or hire fast enough internally, right? And so it was the ability to scale with a certain velocity and to tap into like new talent pools that were able to like not only do what we found effective in testing, but even to come up with additional ideas and a different, you know, new and creative ways of thinking about it. And so throughout that partnership, we had a lot of success. I mean, we drove not just because of the partnership with Learning Mate, but it was certainly a part of it. We drove double digit completion gains for multiple years. I think last year Penn Foster had the highest gain in completion year over year in their 130-year history. And so there was a lot of success there. So not only did I find, you know, Learning Mate an effective partner, you know, when you work with somebody that intimately for that long a period of time, you get to know them as people too.
Yeah.
And it's not just a vendor, it's not just a company, it really is a partnership. I mean, they want you to be successful too, right? So I just really enjoyed getting to know the senior leadership and the team. I think it's a servant leader type of organization. It's gotten to the point where like it really does feel like work family.
Yeah.
And so I think that all of those things that I just said, I think are the key. It's a partnership, it's not a vendor. You're tapping into new skill sets that you may not have, and you're able to scale with the velocity and scale up and scale down that you can't do with an internal team.
Yeah, I appreciate that insight. You know, Learning Mate was a vendor of mine too when I was at Pearson, when I was at McGraw-Hill, and I had the same exact experience. Getting to know the executive team, it'll be, you know, 15, almost 20 years that I've known these folks, and I definitely feel the same about the family. And I know even as clients now, that is the approach that we take internally. So I'm glad that you felt that. But, you know, we don't have too much longer. And I do want you to talk a little bit more about, you know, the Los Angeles Pacific University, you know, if, zooming out, you know, what does that future look like for you? And if you have any predictions on the future of education, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, I've got three, but let me just tell you about Los Angeles Pacific real quick, because I never really heard of Los Angeles Pacific University until I really felt deeply that I was being called to move more into a spiritual faith-based organization, which has been really a dream of mine for a long time. And when I really felt I was being called, I had a mentor of mine who ended up becoming president there, Jay Gohan, great president. And you know, he sort of shot me a text one day, and I was like, you know, LEPU, and I started looking at them, and you know, they're part of the Azusa Pacific kind of family, so there's a connection there. But as I started to like ask about them, I mean, everybody had such like positive remarks about them. And, you know, since joining, I can just affirm that the buzz is real. You know, it's a really innovative team that is obsessed with student success. And there is such a commitment to humanizing that environment where students really feel there's real, genuine people, from success coaches to the quality of faculty instruction, which is, there's real high standards for everything. That you know, the students that join LEPU, they feel taken care of. And that's a big deal to me. And I feel really, really proud of that. And so I've been really impressed with the way that that culture, that community serves the students. It's a real faith-based, the mission's real, right? In terms of like the future, where it's going, I mean, I have like three things I would say. Number one, I mean, we sort of joked around about sort of AI and cheating, but I actually think part of the future, if we're intentional and we seize the moment of the opportunity, is we get serious about authentic learning and authentic assessment. Mm. You know, gone are the days of like reading scrolls and taking, you know, multiple choice memory tests. Like we should just kill that. We shouldn't try to AI proof that. That feels like a waste of time. Not that there's not a place for that. Like I'm all for drill and feedback. Like don't get me wrong on that. But like to really demonstrate mastery, we need to get into authentic learning, into authentic assessment. We need to do a lot more learning by doing. You can do that online and you can try to scale that, but I also think you need to find ways to the extent you can to get students in the real life. And in learning, I mean, I really think that my prayer is that AI forces us into that, that reimagining of the learning environment to be far more situated, authentic learning and assessment. So like, that's one. I think two, which you could argue is maybe more controversial, but I'm going to say it because I believe it, which is if we're really serious about reimagining aspects of higher education, especially adult online education, I think we have to rethink general education. Mm. Like, I don't get why a student, you know, needs to take a version of high school for 2 years before they can get into their career.
Right.
I know that that's debatable. I know there's cases and reasons for why we do that. When I was 18, 19 years old, and I was still had so much to learn about life and all that sort of stuff. I love my sociology class. I love my psychology class. I even like my stats class. Like there's at that time in my life, for sure. But if you're talking about, let's say someone like my sister who's wanting to make a career shift and needs to do it fast, she has a son, you know, and she's married, luckily, and her husband, you know, has a decent income, but you know, she really wants to upgrade their family, and like she's really considering making an investment in her education. Is she gonna take 2 years of like history?
Right.
And do you know what I'm saying? And so I think we have to reimagine general education. And I'm not saying do away with the durable skills that are part of it. I'm saying figuring out how to integrate it into more career relevant ways. And so I predict and hope future is one where at least a part of the higher education pie is bold and courageous enough to rethink general education. Hmm. I would say that's two. And then I think is three, we talked about it. I think it's precision education. I mean, we're getting to a point where if you invest, which I think we haven't talked about this yet, but I think maybe it's another podcast, but you have got to invest in the right data ecosystem. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
Because in order to deliver precision education, you have to have great data, right? You have to be able to segment the population. You have to be able to deliver more tailored solutions. All of that is based on really good data ecosystem. So I think the future is more of a shift towards precision education. And I think data foundation ecosystem capability is key.
I appreciate that insight. There is something called the Education to Workforce Framework that I'm going to send you a link to, and I'll put a link into this podcast page as well, where I think that there are people, the Education Commission of the States is one organization that is trying to drive data to inform those decisions on student success through workforce and fills those gaps where they need be, which makes it as personalized as you can possibly get. So I think that there's a lot of value there. And honestly, what I'm taking away from this whole thing is just your exuberance and focus on education and the future of education. So I think that the industry is lucky to have you. And I know at Learning Mate, we're lucky to have you out on the advisory board. So thank you so much for joining me today, Andrew.
Thanks, Shannon. Have fun.
Thanks. I'm so happy. So thank you for tuning in to the Learning Mate podcast. A big thank you to Andrew Sheen for joining us today and sharing his insights on scaling education, driving innovation, and the power of strategic partnerships. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and visit learningmate.com/podcast for resources and show notes. And that's all, folks. Thanks so much.